Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The Fort Bend County Sheriff's Office tweeted out pictures of native alligators on people's porches with the tag, "Leave alone till water recedes." Then there are the 350 rescued gators at Gator Country in Beaumont, Texas. The owner worries they'll wiggle out as waters rise. Then there's the waste. Houston is negotiating an EPA consent decree that requires the city to upgrade its water and sewage system, which has historically backed up. And of course, it overflowed from Harvey. This is not a pleasant subject, but what happens if waters fill with fecal material? Can you get cholera, which causes sometimes fatal vomiting and diarrhea? What about all the submerged cars? If people get cuts, will they get tetanus and possibly fatal breathing problems? Let's bring in Amish Adulja, an infectious disease expert and a senior associate at Johns Hopkins University Center for Health Security. Dr. Adulja, start there.
Some of the water has sewage in it. Some of the water just has the normal microorganisms that live in water. You would expect to see an upswing in some of the diarrheal illnesses in this type of a setting.
You know, you have thousands of people in a convention center, for instance. If there is some sort of infectious diarrheal illness that spreads quickly, where do they literally go?
Yeah, it'll definitely be a hard problem to control the waste and do basic infection control and hygiene in these kind of settings where you've got a lot of people housed together with not a lot of personal space. And we've seen outbreaks like this in all kinds of mass gatherings or clustered populations. It's not just going to be GI viruses. You're also going to see respiratory viruses spread as people are unable to wash their hands or coughing and sneezing. Those types of infections also would be expected to occur in this setting.
Yeah. What about some of the concerns that people have of things like, you know, tetanus or cholera even?
Well, first, tetanus is something that you hear a lot about, and some of the risks are overblown. The people who need tetanus vaccines are those who are not immunized. If people have kept up with their boosters, they shouldn't really be at risk for tetanus. So that sometimes comes up in all of these disasters, and sometimes I think it's a little bit misplaced. With regard to cholera, cholera is a risk in certain areas. However, Texas doesn't have a major cholera problem. We have only a handful of cholera cases in the United States. Of course, there could be cholera in the Gulf water that people now are ingesting as that water makes it into their drinking supply. But I wouldn't put cholera at the top of my list. It's something that we should think about. But I do think more common things like E. coli, norovirus, rotavirus, even a little bit odd things like leptospirosis, which comes from rat urine.
Ooh.
Those are things that we really need to look for.
Leptospirosis, how do we look for that?
Well, so leptospirosis is a pathogen that is excreted in rat urine. And lots of urban rats have leptospirosis in their urine. And we see high levels of that, the antibodies to it in kids who live in urban areas. So you would expect with all of these rats running for their lives, just like humans are in this flood territory, there's going to be people exposed to rat urine. It may get into their mouth, it may get into their eyes, and then that bacteria can then transmit. And that can cause some severe infections, including some that are life-threatening.
And when you do stop and think about everything that's on the street, just on the ground, I mean, we walk dogs, there's all sorts of animals, outside. But then you also have cars. And then you also have that Houston is the center of the chemical industry in the United States. And Renee Funk, Associate Director for Emergency Management of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said the number one thing they're worried about is chemicals from the plants, but also people's homes. If everybody thinks about what they have in their cleaning closet or what they have in their garage or their shed, and then you throw in that Houston or the region has 24 Superfund sites. The EPA calls some of the things that were in these Superfund programs legacy contamination. There's lead, arsenic. There's accounts of people in their neighborhood having a site for a factory that used to use creosote and other toxins, and they can see it. And so if they can see it, when the waters rise, the waters were carrying it away. What does that do?
It's hard to say exactly what it will do because there's lots of different combinations, and a lot of it is going to also depend upon the concentration that someone is exposed to, because we know that if something is very diluted, it may not pose as much of a risk as if you're getting it in a fully concentrated form. The other thing is a lot of the danger may be from ingesting something. So if you swallow contaminated water that has toxic chemicals in it, you may develop symptoms. But also some can be absorbed through the skin. And it's really hard to make any kind of educated comments about it because we don't know exactly what the contents people are being exposed to are. Once you have that, then you can start to think about what the different toxidromes they may be experiencing would be. And I think that's why it's really important that people try and avoid the floodwaters because not only are there infectious risks there, there are also toxic risks as well.
What else are you thinking about when it comes to health concerns?
One of the things that our group has studied is the effect that these types of natural disasters have on the healthcare sector. And we've already seen in this disaster multiple hospitals go under distress. We heard about Bentaub Hospital having a failed evacuation, Bentaub running out of food. We've heard about some of the cancer centers there having to cancel appointments and having to rearrange their schedules. So what I suspect is going to happen is for the months after this event has occurred, you're going to have basically a new normal in the healthcare sector where people are displaced from their usual place of care. Maybe their hospitals or services have been cut and they're going to be seeking care elsewhere. And that can cause what's called a surge situation at many other hospitals where they're going to be inundated with patients they may not know, who may have needs that their hospital doesn't have. That type of thing happened during Hurricane Sandy in New York and New Jersey, and I expect that's going to happen as well in Houston. I mean, the things that you don't think about are, for example, methadone clinics, and if people need to get their methadone prescription or they go to a certain dialysis clinic, which is now underwater or gone, where are they going to turn up and who knows their exact dialysis formula that they use? All of that needs to really be thought about, and that's why hospitals really, in the wake of Hurricane Katrina several years ago, really started thinking about emergency preparedness in a new way.
That's Dr. Amish Adalja, an infectious disease expert and senior associate at Johns Hopkins University Center for Health Security. Doctor, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, rat urine.